begin by introducing this concept of a disease triangle. Plant pathologists use this often to describe plant diseases. And what I wanted to say about this was that in order for us to find aphid disease in the field, we really need three components to be present. And that's the host, obviously, the inoculum source that causes the infection, and then the environment needs to be conducive for disease transmission, otherwise we won't see any disease. So now I'd like to talk about soybean rust and introduce it and let everybody know what it's about. It's caused by a fungus called Phacopsora pachyrhizae. It was introduced into North America in 2004, and when it was first introduced, people expected about a 10% yield loss in the Midwest and the Northeast, and 50% or more yield loss in the South. And the reason that they expected this difference in yield losses is because soybean rust can overwinter in the South. However, in the Midwest and the Northeast, it needs to be blown there by wind or rain every season. It can't overwinter there. And these pictures show the typical symptoms of soybean rust, these brown pustules on the bottom of the leaves. And in severe soybean rust infections, we can get this field was severely infected with soybean rust. So the disease can be very, very detrimental to soybean yields. And in order to prevent these yield losses, we must use fungicides. Fungicides are the only option. And unfortunately, once rust is present on 10% of the mid to lower canopy, the fungicides are no longer effective. So monitoring and preventative fungicide applications are essential. And like I said, there's little reach-back control once it's established. So this graphic shows the distribution of soybean rust in North America as of November 28th of this year. And as you can see, it's concentrated in the Southeast. It has gone as far north as Iowa. However, I wanted to mention that the infections found in Iowa were late in the season, and it was beyond the time where yield loss would have occurred. So how bad is this? Fortunately, 75% of soybean acreage is in areas where that would probably be rarely or not yet infected, or in areas where soybean rust cannot overwinter. And only 25% of the soybean acreage is in areas where soybean rust is common, found every year, and is there all year round. So it might not be as bad as it seems. So now I want to move into the aphid pathogens that I work with, and they primarily belong to the order Entomophthalales. And as the name implies, they are insect specialists. They're also obligate pathogens in that they require a living host to survive and reproduce. And as such, they are difficult to culture, so it makes them difficult to mass rear and release to control aphids. So we really rely on them to be there naturally and to do what they do that way. And like I mentioned in the first slide, the environment is very critical for these pathogens to kill aphids and to infect aphids. And these pictures just show what you'd see if you were looking for aphid pathogens. Typically, you'd see this halo of spores on a leaf around an aphid, and if you see that, you're pretty much, it probably was fungi that caused that aphid to die. And this is actually a soybean aphid that's infected, and you can see the outgrowth of the Canidia spores from the aphid body. So from what Dave and I have done in Minnesota, we've found some important aphid pathogens that commonly infect soybean aphid in the field. And Nielsen and Hayek did some work on this too in New York State, and our results have been similar in that Pandora neoaphidus is the most common aphid pathogen that we've found. And Pandora is an aphid specialist. It only infects aphids. And like I said, it's the most common pathogen that we've found infecting soybean aphid. Another pathogen that we found is Zoophora radicans, and that does also infect leafhoppers. So it's not just aphids, but it does infect soybean aphid. We've seen it in the field. And what's interesting about this fungus, as you can see in this picture, there we go. It forms what's called a capillocanidium, and the spore is on the end of a long stalk. So when the aphid walks by, the spore is sticky, and the aphid will pick up that spore as it brushes against it. So that has an interesting way of causing infection. And then finally, we have Canidiobolus thomboides, and that's an aphid pathogen I found in 2005. I think I found it in 10%, about 10% of the aphids that were infected. And there are other species that belong to this genus that also infect aphids. And these are all what the spores look like under the microscope, and that's how I can identify the species. So I'm going to get into some research that was done by Jorge Ruano Rosil in his dissertation. And this is kind of a busy slide, but this is how fungicides affect Mysis persicae in fungicide-treated potato. And as you can see along here, we have the pathogen species, and the top row is the untreated. So that's what you want to compare the rest of the rows to, and these are just fungicide treatments and the percent disease prevalence. As you can see, Zoophora radicans is nearly eliminated when fungicides are added to the crop, and Pandora is decreased too. And what mainly happens and what we've seen is that the fungicide applications delay the epizootic wave, which is what we call this wave here, and it lowers the prevalence of disease that we see. And to summarize the work of Fang et al., they've done a lot of work on how these aphid pathogens are moved around between over long distances, and they trapped hundreds of or thousands of aphids from different species and monitored them for disease. And they did find that a significant proportions of these alate aphids that are trapped are already infected with aphid pathogens. So they concluded that these aphid pathogens are likely getting moved around through alate dispersal. And these infected alates are capable of flying long distances, finding their host plant, producing nymphs, and then leaving secondary infection or causing secondary infection in their nymphs before that they actually die from this infection. So that's an interesting finding. And moving into actually soybean or aphid dispersal as it relates to fungicides, this is also a work by Ruano Rosil. And this is Mysis persicae in potato again, in soybean or in fungicide-treated potatoes. And he found that the fungicide applications actually increased the percent alatoid nymphs that were produced. So we haven't done this work in soybean yet, but it could be that these increased fungicide applications could increase the dispersal capacity of the aphid, which could also be a problem for management. So I'm going to get into what we've done in Minnesota on soybean aphid and its pathogens. So what we first wanted to determine was, do these rust fungicides actually decrease the prevalence of disease as we've shown in green peach aphid and potato? And we did find in 2005, we observed an epizootic in Lamberton, Minnesota, and we did see a significant depression in disease prevalence, which is shown here, in the treated plots compared to the untreated plots. Unfortunately, in 2006, the environment was not conducive for disease, so we only saw very minimal levels of disease and the treatment effects were not observed. And one interesting thing is we did not note an aphid population response, and perhaps the 30% disease prevalence isn't high enough to see that yet, but we're going to continue to look at that in the future. And this past summer, we took on a different idea of how does the timing of the application relative to the initiation of an epizootic affect this detrimental effect that we've observed through these fungicides. So we set up a completely randomized design experiment with two factors, one being fungicide with a water control, astrobular and fungicide we used headline, and astrobular and triazole fungicide, and we used headline SBR. And then our second factor was the timing of the application. And the application was made either a day prior to the release of inoculated aphids or 10 days after the release of inoculated aphids. And so what we did was as you can see in this picture, we set up field cages in which there was a single soybean, plant. And the reason that we caged the plants was because the actual surrounding plants didn't have a lot of aphids and we wanted to make sure that we had enough aphids to actually see disease. So in the laboratory, we inoculated 50 aphids for each cage with Pandora Neo aphidus, and I actually confirmed that about 60% of the aphids that I released were likely infected and did sporulate, so the disease was introduced into each cage. And we monitored the cages twice weekly for disease, and what we did was we collected 60 aphids from each cage, brought them back to the laboratory, watched them for 4 days. Any apparently infected aphids, which... this is what I would find when I found an infected aphid. We'd move this to water auger where it would sporulate. I'd take the spores, stain them, and then check, determine which pathogen caused the disease. And I only recovered Pandora Neo aphidus, so all the infections were caused by Pandora. And I didn't find any infection outside of the cages. And again, aphid counts were made weekly in the cages, and I didn't see a significant population response. So this slide shows my results over time with, on the left, the fungicide was applied before the release of the inoculum, and on the right, the fungicide was applied after the inoculum. And as you can see, the before treatment, both fungicides were depressed compared to the water control. And this was not as apparent on the after treatment. So I did my analysis and I found that fungicide was a significant factor, and we did see a significant depression in disease prevalence in the strobilurin and triazole mix. And as the means by fungicide are on the left panel, and the mean by the time of application is on the right panel. And what I'm showing here is peak prevalence. And what I mean by that is it's the highest prevalence of disease that I saw in any single cage over the course of the experiment. So these cages were independent and they peaked at different times, so I hope that the variance would decrease if I took just the peak prevalence. And I didn't see a significant difference in the timing of the application, although there was a trend that the before time actually was lower than the after timing. So this graph is set up in the same way, except I'm looking at cumulative prevalence. So that's the cumulative proportion of aphids over the entire experiment that were infected. And we saw the same trend in fungicide, in that the multiple mode of action products caused a significant decrease compared to the single mode of action and the water control. However, in this instance, we do see a significant effect of timing, in that the before timing caused a significant decrease in the cumulative prevalence of the disease. So just to conclude, we have shown that fungicides are detrimental to these aphid pathogens in the field. And as many in other cropping systems, we've confirmed that multiple mode of action products have a greater effect than single mode of action products. And that applications that are made prior to the presence of aphid disease are likely more detrimental than when they occur after the arrival of the disease in the field. Sorry. Some implications of this work. So when we consider what typical rust management is going to entail, unfortunately, fungicides are most likely going to be applied prior to the aphid disease arriving in the field. What we've seen is epizootics in mid to late August, and in order for rust fungicides to protect yield, they're probably going to have to be made before the soybeans reach R5. And R5, at least in Minnesota, is usually reached about early August. So if these fungicides are applied, they're probably going to be applied before the aphid disease appears in the field. And the multiple mode of action products are more likely to be used because of concerns of the resistance of the aphid or of the soybean rust becoming resistant to the fungicides. They recommend using multiple mode of action products. So that's going to be another problem for these aphid pathogens, and this does lead to the worst case for aphid pathogens. And referring back to the disease triangle that I introduced at the beginning of the talk, these fungicide applications are likely going to limit or eliminate the inoculum available to cause disease transmission. But again, if the environment isn't conducive, it can become a problem too. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge my lab members, Bruce Potter for his help in Lamberton, various undergrad research assistants, and our funding sources. And I would be happy to take any questions. The question was, has anybody screened any fungicides that may not have an effect on the pathogens? You mean the aphid pathogens?
Yeah.
Not that I know about. I think I'm the only one or there hasn't been much work in that, and I don't think anybody's ever come across that. Any other questions? Yes.
Earlier you showed some data from a separate study that suggested that fungicides would result in a greater production of aphid alates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering,
mm-hmm,
is there any evidence that fungal pathogens increase the rate of alien production?
The question was, is there any evidence that the pathogens increase the alate production in aphids? And I haven't seen any work on that. I haven't read anything about that. I do know that generally alate aphids are more susceptible to the disease than apterous aphids, and that's all that I really know about that.
Thank you.
any other questions? Yes?
In your cage experiment, did you have any differences in the aphid populations within those?
The question was, did I see any differences in the aphid populations within the cages? And when I did my analysis, there was I looked at cumulative aphid days over the entire course of the experiment, and I did see a significant effect of timing, in that the before time showed fewer aphid days than the after time. But there was no significant effect on the fungicides did not have a significant effect on aphid days. And actually, in the future, I would like to look at more specifically the effect of the fungi on aphid population dynamics to really get at how important these pathogens are in aphid, in suppressing the aphid in the field. Any other questions? Yeah?
You said you didn't see any impact on cumulative aphid days, but mm-hmm. Did you see any impact on variability? Higher variance with the fungicides on the cumulative aphid days?
The question was, did I see any higher variance on the cumulative aphid days and the fungicide treatments, and I actually haven't had a chance to look at that, and I probably will now that you mention it. I can't remember off the top of my head whether I did or not. So, but I'm probably gonna go back and look at that. Yes?
You showed the study that the one where the fungal population has spread is to find the infected
aliens.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible that maybe infected aliens migrating from soybean to black sun in the fall might affect the population on black sun?
The question was, do we think that the infected alates moving to buckthorn at the end of the season would affect aphid populations? And that's kind of our hypothesis. That's where we think that the biggest impact on aphid populations is going to be in buckthorn, because I didn't mention it, but actually I collected some alate aphids off buckthorn, and about 70% of the alates that I collected were infected. So we think that that's an important aspect of the system, and we want to look into that further. Any other questions? Yeah.
Do you know what the percent fungicide use in Minnesota is, like for some of these plant health benefits? And do you get phone calls from growers that have trouble or have flares or flare up of aphids?
The question was, what is the percent fungicide use in soybeans in Minnesota, and do we get calls from growers about problems with aphids after fungicide use? And actually, I'm not really sure what the fungicide use levels are in Minnesota. I don't know if...
Very small.
Yeah.
So the
Dave,
plant health kind of things haven't come in very much?
The plant health effects are effects that have been documented a little further south where there's more disease pressure. Minnesota, we've routinely been on the side when you look at those net analysis.
And I have not gotten any calls, but I don't know about Dave.
Somebody is.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Yeah.
Are there any difference in the fungi that infect the aphids on ramus from soybean? I think Hayek and Nielsen and Hayek discovered that
do you mean diversity?
Yes, diversity.
The question was, do I see a higher diversity of fungi infecting the aphid on buckthorn compared to soybean? And actually when I just collected and looked at the aphids, I only found Pandora. So, but an interesting to note about that is that the aphids were collected near a field that was highly infected. I had a lot of aphids that were really infected, and I only found Pandora in that field. So I think that maybe it depends on the amount of, or the diversity of pathogens in the area. I'm not sure. Any other questions?